The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network. Want to fearlessly explore your creative spirit? Join artist Susie K. Edwards for Path of the Butterfly, a weekend workshop at Omega Institute's beautiful campus in Rhinebeck, New York, May 24th through 26. Experiment with a variety of art forms, engage in mindfulness, walking, and silent meditation, and discover a new and free-flowing creative vision. This workshop is for beginners and professional artists. Learn more at eomega.org/thrive.
Support for this show comes from John Maxwell Taylor's Gravida award-winning performance on the life of Swiss psychiatrist Carl Gustav Jung, now available in a stunning new 3D audio set. To learn more, please visit www.johnmaxwelltaylor.com.
From Spirituality and Health magazine, I'm Rabbi Rami, and this is Essential Conversations. My guest today is Christine Toomey. Christine is an award-winning journalist and author who covered foreign affairs for the Sunday Times for more than 20 years. Previously based as a correspondent in Mexico City, Paris, Berlin, and now London, she has reported from over 60 countries. Her journalism has been syndicated globally, and she's twice won Amnesty International's Magazine Story of the Year Award. Her new book, In Search of Buddha's Daughter, A Modern Journey Down Ancient Roads, is reviewed by Sam Moe in the current issue, March-April issue of Spirituality and Health magazine. Christine Toomey, welcome to Essential Conversations. Before we get into your new book, give us some of your, a sense of your spiritual autobiography. You know, where, how were you raised religiously? Where do you find yourself now?
Well, I was born in Wales, here in the UK, and I was raised Anglican. I was confirmed, occasional churchgoer. I went at, you know, Christmas and on certain occasions, but I wouldn't have described myself as a particularly religious person or a regular churchgoer. But I was always interested. I would say I had spiritual leanings and had some meditation practice before I started this book. I was a regular yoga practitioner, and I would describe myself as very open-minded, but not particularly not a particularly religious person.
And the book is about Buddhist nuns, but do you consider yourself a Buddhist?
Well, I certainly knew almost nothing about Buddhism before I started this book, which might sound rather strange, but the way I came to the book was kind of an unusual way. And perhaps it's easier if I describe that to you and kind of get to that question a little bit further down the line, because I guess I would now say that I have huge respect for Buddhist teachings, and I do attend teachings when I can, but it's part of what informs my worldview, if you like. I'm not a person that's given to labels, and particularly as a writer and as a journalist, perhaps that's something we're kind of trained to avoid in some ways. But the way I came to the book, as I say, was slightly unusual, in that I was on an assignment in Dharamsala in India to write about the transfer of power from the Dalai Lama to a transfer of temporal power to the elected Prime Minister, Dr. Lobsang Sangay. And it was a long feature that appeared in the Financial Times magazine, in fact. And it was really during the course of researching that article. My style of journalism is always to speak to as many people as I can in different situations to try and, you know, get the context. And I started meeting Buddhist nuns who'd come out of Tibet with the most extraordinary stories. They stories of great hardship. I mean, some had been imprisoned and tortured in Chinese jails, and they escaped over the Himalayas and were living then in Dharamsala in quite difficult circumstances. And I, because my background as a journalist has been, a lot of it's been covering human rights issues in many different places like Bosnia, Kosovo, Colombia. I worked in Latin America for many years, and I sort of came at it initially through almost as an interest in human rights. You know, what these women had gone through, their extraordinary experiences, and that was really what drew me to the subject, because I was going to go back and write about their lives. But then when I started investigating the lives of Buddhist nuns in other parts of the world, I just realized that there was this extraordinary world of female wisdom and strength and courage and just extraordinary stories, extraordinary experiences. And so I was drawn into it through sort of a journalistic perspective, if you like, initially, not because I was coming to it as a Buddhist practitioner. It kind of came about in an unexpected way.
So it was really the experiences of these women that drew you into this rather than the religion itself.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. So our readers know, I mean, you've traveled over 60,000 miles in doing research for this book, talking to Buddhist nuns from, I mean, the Himalayan villages to San Francisco.
Yes.
So did you find a common thread among these women?
Well, I would say the common thread would be that they're extremely determined, very strong, courageous women who've chosen a path, certainly in the West, that's very unusual. Obviously, less so in the East, but even in the Eastern countries that I write about, in Nepal and India, Japan, Burma, you know, these are not, you know, they're stepping outside the usual experience of young women, and a lot of these are young women that I'm talking to. So they're very feisty characters, and some of them have come to the sort of monastic path through a certain experience in their lives, either perhaps a loss or a sudden change in their circumstances that has really made them stop and stand back and reflect on their lives. And so I think there is some common thread in some of their life experiences, but in fact they really come from a huge diversity of backgrounds. I mean, in the East, for instance, one was had been a counter-terrorist policewoman, one was a princess, one was, in Japan, for instance, one had been a very successful novelist. She'd written erotic fiction and when she was younger. She's still continuing to write. She's in her 90s now. She's sort of a national institution in Japan. She's very, very well known. And in Burma, you know, a lot of young women who are coming from sort of rural areas. So they come from very, very diverse backgrounds. But in terms of the characteristics, they are very determined, reflective, strong women. And I think that's what really drew me to want to write about their stories, because I think it's very, you know, I found them very inspiring. And I felt that they would be, I hope, very inspiring for other people to read about, too.
So just a process question. How did you decide whom to interview?
Well, the book is structured because I knew, I knew very little about Buddhism before I began this book. And so I had to sort of explain it to myself in a way. And I wanted to understand how Buddhism had changed in the paths it had taken from East to West. And so I structured my book in the way that the first half of the book is in the East and the second half is in the West. And I follow some of the routes that Buddhism has taken as it's traveled from East to West. So it kind of gave me the structure of the way I wanted to write the book. And then within that structure, there were certain, you know, I did a lot of research, and I there were certain communities that I wanted to go to. I wanted to explain certain traditions. I concentrated, for instance, on three traditions: the Tibetan, Himalayan Buddhist tradition, and the Theravada tradition, and also the Zen tradition. So within those three traditions, I wanted to choose communities where women were living very different lives. And for instance, in Nepal, the book starts out with a community of young Tibetan Buddhist nuns in Nepal who practiced kung fu every day. So these were women doing extraordinary things, things unexpected that you just really wouldn't imagine. And because they, you know, captured my interest, I knew that was a community I wanted to go to. Once I got there, you know, it was a question then of determining who I could speak to, who would be willing to speak to me. And in some other communities, the Zen Buddhist nun I mentioned in Japan, I knew before I went there that I really would like to interview her. So that was more a process of, several months of emails and letters, going back and forth to arrange, to be able to visit. And some of these women, these are not women who seek publicity. In some cases, it was quite difficult to find a time when they were able to meet with me, because a lot of them are traveling and teaching, or they're going into retreats. So logistically, it was quite difficult. But in terms of the people I spoke to, in some ways it sort of grew organically. In some communities I would speak to a particular person who would recommend I would speak to somebody else, in the next place I was going on to. So and that's really the way it evolved.
So they passed you around from community to community.
Well, only in a few cases.
Yeah, I understand. I'm being a little facetious.
Not really, because the way the book is written, in some cases I had to do certain aspects of the trip in a different order, but just purely for logistical reasons, because the women I wanted to speak to were in different retreats. So I guess what I'm saying is that it's like opening a door. Once I opened that door, I started seeing all these amazing paths leading in different directions, and it was a question of me choosing, okay, well, I'm going to follow this one, and I'd like to speak to this person, but are they going to be there? Are they going to be happy to speak to me?
Sure.
I didn't start out with a list, a wish list, and sort of tick them off as I went down. It was okay. A little bit more organic than that, yeah.
Want to fearlessly explore your creative spirit? Join artist Susie K. Edwards for Path of the Butterfly, a weekend workshop at Omega Institute's beautiful campus in Rhinebeck, New York, May 24th through 26. Experiment with a variety of art forms, engage in mindfulness, walking, and silent meditation, and discover a new and free-flowing creative vision. This workshop is for beginners and professional artists. Learn more at eomega.org/thrive.
You mentioned that the change of Buddhism from the East to the West, I mean, that could be a whole book in and of itself, but in a sentence or two, I mean, can you give us a sense of what you think that change is?
Well, I think that the communities I visited in the West, I mean, those I visited in the United States and here in Europe, in the UK and in the south of France, for instance, they are adapting that a lot of the traditions that have been fundamental to the way that Buddhism has been followed in Eastern countries. They are, I mean, for instance, the Srivastava Abbey in Washington State with Venerable Thubten Chodron. She's translating some of the ancient Tibetan texts into English. So it's much easier for the nuns there and those who go to visit to follow and understand more clearly what's happening. What the practices are, what the sutras are, what the devotions are. And in Thich Nhat Hanh's Zen community in the south of France, for instance, Plum Village, there's quite an emphasis on making sure that the nuns have an equal standing with the monks, which in the East is not always the case. It's often not the case that nuns have traditionally have not had the same access to higher teachings, for instance, and their communities have sort of had far less support. So I think as it's come into the West, in Thich Nhat Hanh's community, for instance, the nuns there are very, very dynamic. They're very, they have completely equal standing. They give teachings. They work in the community in the same way. And I think that's that. I think it couldn't be any other way, really. I think in the West, that would be something that, as one of the Zen nuns I interviewed at Thich Nhat Hanh's community, who had been a political aide in Washington, and she sort of said, you know, there was no way she could have joined the community had it not been like that. You know, she grew up as, she described herself as an urban urgent to me, which I thought was a lovely expression, and I could quite see how the fact that the community was very egalitarian sort of principles was very important. And I think for all the women, you know, it has been a struggle in many cases, for in some of the traditions, particularly in Tibetan Buddhism and Theravada traditions. So some of the communities are still struggling to, there's been some resistance. For instance, a community in California, where Ayutthaya Loka in the Theravada tradition has been fully ordaining women, which in the East is not accepted by in many communities, but she's forging ahead and is getting great support now. And so I think it's really it's adapting not the fundamental teachings, but the ways that that the communities are living and practicing are different, and I think much more adapted to our way of life in the West.
So, because we only have a few minutes left, but there was this wonderful line in the book that maybe speaks to what you're saying, or maybe actually goes beyond it. So I'm asking, but you write, in this rapidly changing age, which is forcing many of us to question what is meaningful, the path these women have chosen is not just different, but somehow defiant. So what's defiant? How do you understand this defiance?
Well, because I think a lot of women, you know, there's a lot of pressures on women today all over the world, to conform in some ways and to live a life that's somehow expected. And, you know, young women particularly have so many pressures to live a certain way. And these women are standing back from those expectations, are asking different questions about life. They're living life in a different way, and it's, I find it truly inspiring, because it's not an easy life by any means. And I think to be able to listen to these women's stories, who are taking the time to stand back and ask different questions about life, I think it helps us all to be able to reflect on our lives in a different way. That's certainly what it did with me in the 2 years I spent traveling and writing this book, and I hope it might do the same for those who read it.
So while you were during this 2 year period, if I understand it right, your parents passed away?
Both my parents died shortly before I set off on the travels. In the year that I spent planning and setting up the interviews and planning all the traveling, both my parents passed away within just a few months of each other. My mother actually just a few months before I started traveling. So that was a huge shock.
And you said, I don't know if this was an interview I read or listened to, but you said that somehow this changed the way you approached the book. And I'm just wondering if you knew what that way was. How did it change your approach?
I think it's what I was saying in the beginning about perhaps approaching this initially as from a very much a journalistic point of view. Whereas following the death of both of my parents, I was in a much more vulnerable place. I think I was asking questions perhaps in a different way. I really needed to stop and stand back and reflect. And I think being able to listen to the way that these women do that in life was for me very healing. And I think it's made this, the book is a more personal book than it perhaps otherwise would have been.
Do you know, and this may be just impossible to answer, but I'm wondering if you could bring the interview to a close, in a sense, with something you heard from one of these women that really promoted that healing that others might hear and say, oh yeah, that really is a help.
I think I asked some of the women I met, you know, if they went back to lay life, not that they were considering, if they went back to lay life, what would be the one lesson that they would most take with them? And more than one said would be to constantly let go. And I think you can interpret that in many, many different ways. But I think in terms of loss and grief, it's to let go of it's almost to let go of fear, because I think what I also realized in a retreat I did in a Zen training temple there, where you sit and in silent meditation for long periods, and you realize that actually what is going on in your mind is a lot of it is fear of the emotions that come with loss and grief. And I think to be able to just see and sit with these difficult feelings and then just let them go is a very powerful practice. And it is a practice. It is something that we can all develop. And I think it's something that it was a lesson that was enormously valuable to me, and I hope perhaps might also be the same for anyone who reads the book.
I hope so, and who listens to the interview. This is a great way to bring this to a close, Christine. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
My guest today was Christine Toomey. She's author of In Search of Buddha's Daughter, A Modern Journey Down Ancient Roads. You can learn more about Christine's work at christinetoomey.com. So, Christine, again, thanks so much for being with us on Essential Conversations.
A pleasure. Thank you very much.
Support for this week's edition of Essential Conversations is provided by John Maxwell Taylor's Gravida award-winning performance on the life of Swiss psychiatrist Carl Gustav Jung. The performance is entitled Forever Jung, now available in a deluxe 3-CD audio set. To learn more, please visit johnmaxwelltaylor.com. Essential Conversations with Rabbi Rami is a project of Spirituality and Health magazine. Visit spiritualityhealth.com and subscribe to the magazine in either print or digital formats, and download the iTunes app for this podcast. Essential Conversations is produced by Ezra Baker, and our program coordinator is Alma Tassi. I'm Rabbi Rami. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Liz Winter, and I have been a medium and a spiritual development teacher for over 30 years. On my podcast, All Aboard the Medium Ship, I want to share the message with you that there is a wealth of love and comfort available to you from the spirit world. On my podcast, you can experience this comfort and peace for yourself through gentle guided meditations and helpful messages. Make sure you subscribe and follow so you never miss an episode. Part of the mindbodyspirit.fm podcast network.